Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud today. Can you hear my voice this time? This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm alright song. My power turned up. Stop it right now. I'll be gone. I'll play my fight.
I'm your host, Merle Exit. Okay, it's, what time is it? 11 a.m. here in New York City, and it's around really cloudy out. I don't expect rain today, okay, but it's not cold, so I guess one good thing, you know, and otherwise, what we're going to be talking about today is Zingerman's Bakery, located in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're doing a food thing, but that won't be until just a little while. So, in the mean before I have the people from there calling in, first let's, listen, if I'm going to be having all this baked goods and cake and stuff, yeah, I might as well, have a glass of milk.
Hey, Martha, why do you smile? I was just thinking, I'm here at Ronnie Brook Farms eating delicious grass, not being injected with some synthetic hormones. I just gave birth to another cutie calf. And don't even have to deal with any bull. I hear you, Mar. You know what they call cows that can't give milk? No, what, Sal? Utter failure. So, where is our big daddy Ronnie? Probably somewhere exercising, doing yogurt.
At Ronnie Brook Farms, you'll find the best of dairy products. Our milks vary in butterfat, from non-fat to heavy cream. Enjoy the creamy yogurts from the cup or one that you can simply drink with the best of culture without artificial thickeners or additives. We don't have sour cream. We do have creme fraiche. Butter is better when you can choose cinnamon toast to spread on bread or pancakes. And since we scream for ice cream any time of year, you'll love our 16% butterfat. Do you remember getting bottled milk delivered, opening it to find the cream on the top? That is how you'll find our sweet-tasting cream-lined milk.
I'll hand it to you, Sal. Our milk may get past your eyes, but certainly not homogenized.
Ronnie Brook Farms, where cows always seem to be in a good mood. Check us out at www.ronniebrook.com.
There's nothing like milk, especially when I'm going to be talking about. For me, there's no such thing as coffee cake. There's milk cake. But anyway, I want to do something. I want to send out a song. I have a friend from years ago, Sharon Alpern Schultz. And she happens to love Barry Manilow. So I'm going to play a song to dedicate to her. Why not?
Last night I waved
Someone's going out to Las Vegas, I think, to see him. But anyway, so, okay, so we're waiting for Frank and Carollo and maybe Amy Emberling, the owners of Zingerman's Bakery, to call in so we can, so I can drool all over again about, I was going to do a taste testing right here, but yeah, well, I tasted, I think, everything. So, and someone's coming into the room. Is it? Wanted to say hello, and also they were very happy. Well, I didn't really like know. They slipped into my Rollator and came along with me to an art reception that from the Marlene Yu Museum. Well, not the museum. Well, part of the museum is in Queens, in Long Island City. The Marlene Yu Rainforest Art Foundation, and so they had a reception of young artists, and I suddenly found Esther and Eunice that packed up in my Rollator, because, well, you know, they wanted to see everything, and it turns out, we, aside from the new artists, we went upstairs to Marlene's studio, where we saw her latest. It's 54-foot long mural on one-piece canvas that she painted. The woman is 81 years old, or I should say 81 years young. I asked how she did this. So, well, part of it was on the floor. Then part of it was then done on scaffolding. And we have to also thank James, you, her husband, for assisting her on getting these up onto the wall, too. So that's what my that's what Esther and Eunice did lately. I'm not sure whether I'll bring them tonight. Tonight I'm going to the Queens Theater, which used to be called Queens Theater in the Park, at Flushing Meadow Corona Park in Queens, where this actually the building, the theater goes back from the 1964 World's Fair that they had here in New York City. Same building, but so totally renovated over the years. So I have to go to a function there having to do with dance. And I'll probably have somebody talk on my radio show about, it's not one particular dance company, but I guess I'm getting that there's going to be several that are going to get one particular, like, facility to have. I understand there's lots of dance companies in Queens, and I guess they're going to be touring Queens, too. But that's what I'm going to find out later. And I don't think there'll be any Zingerman's baked goods there. But I was told there will be some kind of nosh, which will probably happen after we sit through the dance. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. That's going to be kind of fun. And what else? Oh, yeah, well, I spoke about, right. Okay. See, what he's doing is hang. Okay. I'm going to play. I'm going to have to play a commercial while, because he's calling me in on the wrong phone number. So let me see if I could catch him. Let's see. Okay. No. Okay. I'll just pick any song. Let's just, okay. Okay. Let's do this one. Why not? Okay. Let me see if I can catch him.
She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. She may be the beauty or the beast, maybe the famine or the feast, may turn each day into a heaven or a hell. She may be the mirror of my dreams, a smile reflected in a stream. She may not be what she may seem inside her shell. Thank you. one's allowed to see them when they cry. She may be the love that cannot hope to last, may come to me from shadows of the past that I remember till the day I die. She may be the reason I survive, the why and wherefore I'm alive, the one I'll care for through the rough and ready years. Me, I'll take her laughter and her tears and make them all my souvenirs. Where she goes, I've got to be. The meaning of my life is she. She. Oh, she.
Okay, Frank, we're ready for you.
Hi, Merle.
Hiya.
Hi, Merle. I'm here, too. It's Amy.
Oh, good. I got the both of you.
Yeah.
First, I have to tell you, I was going to do a tasting here, except I'm overstuffed from tasting everything yesterday. I, like, tasted everything.
You mean you ate it?
Well, I didn't eat everything, all of the things, but I had to, like, open up everything and taste it.
What'd you think?
It's delicious.
Good, it's supposed to be.
Yeah, okay. So let's start with telling everybody who you guys are and how this bakery started. Since neither of you's last name is Zingerman.
Well, Zingerman is a made-up name. The two founders of Zingerman's Delicatessen, their last names are actually Weinzweig and Saginaw. So they decided that wouldn't be a very good name for a place, and they wanted something kind of energetic and a little bit Jewish. And then
yeah.
Paul Saginaw's grandfather told him, this was when we still used to have phone books, and he said, choose a name that either starts with an A or a Z so it's easy for people to find. And that's how they came up with Zingerman. So there you go. Anyway, Frank, why don't you tell us how the bakery started?
So the bakery started in 92, and that was at a point where the delicatessen was 10 years old, and Paul and Ari had built that deli from being a place that started with the two of them and one other person to a place that was well known in the United States for making great sandwiches and carrying really wonderful foods from around the world. And they really traveled around the country and around the world meeting and finding great foods that were traditionally made and really delicious. And after 10 years, it became apparent to them that though they were buying the best bread available in Detroit and really in Michigan, it didn't measure up to what they knew existed in our country at the time. New York had, of course, great baking tradition, and San Francisco had the real artisan bread movement was already going. And of course, wherever they traveled in Europe, they tasted bread that was superior to what they were buying in Michigan. Though it was the best they could get here, it didn't measure up to what they knew existed. And it was a really key part of making a great deli, because if you want a great sandwich, you need to make great bread. And if you do catered events, it almost always included baked goods. And when people came in the shop, they wanted to buy baked goods. So strategically, it was important to improve the quality and the consistency of the bread. And I had been Paul's partner in another business for the prior 7 years, and I was free to do something. And Ari had the idea that maybe we should start baking bread. And the only bread I had baked was a loaf of zucchini bread in college, which didn't count. But we found Michael London from Saratoga Springs, upstate New York, and I baked with him for a couple of weeks, and he gave us a few recipes, and we got going in September of 92, and humbly, we did pretty good from the start, and a year later, we started baking pastries, and then it's been sort of nonstop progress since then. So now we have a cake studio that makes wonderful specialty cakes. And, you know, I located the bakery in a industrial park 4 miles from the deli because it offered inexpensive warehouse space that was 7 minutes from my home and 10 minutes from the deli. And right on the interstate, and never thinking that we'd have a shop, but now we also have a shop that does a phenomenal amount of business each week, and we started a baking school 12 years ago, and we've grown from myself and eight other people originally to now we have 140 people and those five separate things going, and we go 24 hours a day. 365 days a year.
So there's no day of rest for either of you.
No.
No. Why would you want to rest?
Yes, that's what I say to people. Why would I want to rest?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, it's interesting because I got it, and I just want to. And you can sit your kosher place, right?
No, we're not. We're not kosher, actually.
Oh, that's what I thought. That's what I thought Frank said. So, in other words, real bacon.
That was a joke because you asked for the apple bacon coffee cake, and I'm sorry. I must have made my joke less apparent.
That you know, because that's funny because I with the food I got the thing about the bacon fest that you're doing.
Yeah, Camp Bacon.
Yeah. That's one thing. I absolutely love bacon.
Good.
But
thank goodness.
I tend not to have it in the house because I have this problem about two slices. That's not enough. Half a pound.
I recognize that problem.
Yeah, so, okay, so what I want to do first is get into what I had, because some of them are part of the book. So this is because I have the Zingerman's Bakehouse, that the book that the two of you authored has all these wonderful recipes. Now, are the recipes that are in the book are the same ones you use for the that
in
you
the bakery.
Bake there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious in case. Of course, I look at it and go, I guess if you like baking, it's like, oh yeah, really easy to do. I'm terrible at baking because I don't like to follow that it needs exactly a cup of, exactly a, you know what I mean?
Why not?
A teaspoon of. I realize it's chemical, but it doesn't work for me. But anyhow, so let's get to what I had. I'll try not to drool all over my computer, by the way. As we're talking about this. And the first thing I wanted to also mention, you also have a creamery as well?
Yeah, so Zingerman's is actually 10 separate businesses at the moment. So there's the original delicatessen, then the bakehouse was second. We have a mail order company. And then we have a creamery that makes fresh cheeses and gelato, a coffee company that roasts their own coffee and has a shop, a candy company, an American restaurant called Zingerman's Roadhouse, an event space, kind of a farm called Corn Man Farm Events. And then our newest business is a Korean restaurant called Miss Kim, making very traditional Korean food.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. There's so many kids now. And then Zing Train, which is actually teaches all of our business practices to other companies.
I'm definitely going to have to do a press trip to come up there.
I think you do if you can come up there. You could eat for several days. We'll take you around.
Yes, I will discuss this with tourism. But first, let's get to the things I ate. Okay. The sour cream coffee cake. Oh, yes. Was that the, I wrote it was pecans, not pecans.
No,
they're
it's walnuts.
Those walnuts, right?
Right. Mhm.
Okay.
How was it?
I was good. I just had two pieces. Like, I had a piece to try, and then, like, later I said, I just have another small piece of that one. It's very difficult. So I guess
good.
You could say it was good.
I think so. Yeah. So that's what, it's one of our signature things. We probably sell more of those than anything else. Sort of classic, Jewish coffee cake.
Well, of course, I also, like, logically looked at it and said, oh, right, and walnuts, that's what it is. It was walnuts in there. Well, walnuts are good for you.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's... Now, the apple bacon coffee cake. Oh, I mean, what could you want more than that?
Oh, wow, you really got it. You really got that?
Yes.
Yeah,
so that's why I wasn't
real.
Sure whether it was real bacon or
bacon
bits.
No, it's real bacon. Yep, it's a
okay,
full meal
why
there.
That's why it tasted so good.
Yeah. That's not the classic Jewish coffee cake.
No, not at all. That's really, that's such a wonderful idea. By the way, apple and bacon is actually came from Native American Indians. That was a food that Native American Indians had, apples and bacon. Just thought I'd throw that out.
I didn't know that. So it's a
you're
classic
just adding the
Native
cake.
American cake? we're gonna change the message on it. Classic Native American coffee.
Then I had the Roadhouse bread because I had to, like, okay, well, I had to put the pimento cheese on something. So and the bread, by the way, as I started thinking, what a perfect bread for, like the soup bowl kind of thing that you do. You ever do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
you make your own soup and do that?
We sure do. We actually make two soups here every day for our lunch customers. So we might eat it with Roadhouse. I haven't made a bowl out of the Roadhouse for it. How did you like that pimento cheese?
Oh, that was after I got over the fact that it was spicy, I went, okay. Now I got it spicy. All right, now let's continue. Because the first thing I did is I didn't put it on the bread. I tasted it without the bread first. I went, it's hot. Okay. To put on bread. Okay. And that is absolutely delicious.
Yeah. I think it's great. Pretty addictive.
And then, of course, I didn't get to the cream cheese yet. I think that's the only thing I didn't try.
And tomorrow.
It's very difficult. Yeah, I would. No, that's today. I'm going to have that because I'm going to be very calm today. I have some scrambled eggs Have you ever, and with cream cheese on a piece of bread?
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah. And it's hard with, you know, cream cheese, like, and I've had cream cheese without the crap, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's nice to have it that way. It's, you know, it's much better.
It is better, tastier, but it's unusual, so people aren't, oh, you know, they're not totally prepared for it. It takes a couple of times of tasting it to get used to it.
Really? Oh, because I think they're pushing something on TV. I see something called Arla, A-R-L-A, is a company that's pushing this thing with having cream cheese without all the additives kind of thing.
I have to look that up, A-R-L-A.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, let's see. And then the pecan blondies.
Right.
Okay. Now, they were okay. I'm a chocoholic, so.
Sorry.
So I said, okay, for non-chocolate, all right. Now, here's the one that I can't say I love the most, because we're talking a difference between sweet and savory, in terms of savory. I had the cabbage, Reti's, R-E-T-E-S.
Yeah, that is
the Hungarian
called,
strudel.
Right, Retes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Retes. Now, let me ask you something, because I understand you have other Hungarian products as well,
we do.
Correct?
We do, yes.
Is there any particular reason why, other than being hungry, that Hungarian?
Yeah, well, Merle, we wanted to, we mainly make Jewish things, American things, and then some Western European things. And we've been, you know, baking for more than two decades, and we wanted to learn some different baking. So we started to research other parts of the world. Where could we go and learn something interesting? And fortunately, I happened upon Hungary, and, you know, the history of Hungary, I think, is quite fascinating, and they have an incredibly developed cuisine that I think many Americans don't know that much about. Of course, there are Hungarian immigrants here in the United States, but the groups are not as large as some of the other immigrant groups. And there are some Hungarian Jews here in the United States, but also not as big sort of a group as some of the other Jewish immigrant groups. So the food is not as well known, and we thought, wow, this food is incredible, and it's not that well known. Why don't we start to study it and educate other people about it? I think the other thing,
okay,
Merle, is
okay,
that, you know, we started,
yep,
as a Jewish deli, and the largest Jewish population in Eastern Europe today is in Budapest. And we thought, wouldn't it be fantastic to go back there and eat all the Ashkenazi Jewish food that so many American Jews are used to, sort of in Eastern Europe, being made by Jews who are still living there. So that's been a big part of our trip, is getting back in touch with the Jewish community that's in Budapest now. So that's why we did it.
What are some of the other Hungarian products that you offer?
Well, we make several really beautiful and tasty cakes. One is called Dobos Torta, which is probably Hungary's most famous cake. You know, it has five layers. I think a lot of American Jews are used to seven-layer cake. Do you know about a seven-layer cake? Right. But I think, you know, traditionally it's actually five layers. So that's one that we're making. And then we make something that's called Esterhazy Torta, and it's got sort of soft meringue walnut layers and rum walnut buttercream between the layers. And it's a famous Hungarian tort it's named after a member of the aristocracy. And then, we make this other fantastic cake that's called Rigo Yanchi. It's sort of a chocolate sponge with chocolate cream in between the layers, and it's got this great story. Rigo Yanchi was a Hungarian violinist, and he actually married the daughter of the first millionaire from Michigan, and her name was Clara Ward. And she was over in Europe just having a great time, and she saw him performing, and she was married to someone else, and she slipped him her diamond ring, and then they took off together. She got divorced, and then she married him. So this cake is named after him. Isn't that a great story?
That's really cool.
Right, and then she was this, you know, daughter of the first Michigan millionaire, and here we are in Michigan learning about him for the first time when we're over in Hungary. And then we make
Michigan
these strudels.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, Michigan is doing this whole thing with Pure Michigan.
Yes, right.
It's like, I think every channel on my TV is inundated with the commercial.
Oh, it's interesting that it reached you. So are you tempted to come now?
Well, actually what had happened was that I think this was, you know, see how time flies. So I'm going to say 2 years ago that I went on a press trip, and as part of Pure Michigan brought me in, and we went to Grand Rapids, Detroit, and Lansing.
Huh, they skipped Ann Arbor?
I don't know. You know, they picked it, whatever. However, you know, I guess I could probably arrange something with tourism, you know, to do a fam tour.
Yeah.
Because as it turns out, because I'm going to be writing a travel article about Ann Arbor, and you guys are gonna help me. Now, the first thing I want to do, though, is I want you to plug. You have partners that you're involved with, right? Companies.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You want to plug them?
You mean with people that we sell to, or the other Zingerman's businesses?
No, the ones that help you. Part, you said there's like 10 companies, and you know, things like that. And in other words, for instance, now let's say the creamery. You're taking the milk from a farm and making the cream cheese, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
right.
let's plug the farm where you get.
Oh, right. So there's this great family here in Michigan whose last name is Calder, and they have this farm. They take incredibly good care of their cows. I think, you know, long before people made a big fuss about taking care of animals well, they already named their cows and took good care of them. And the creamery uses their milk to make many of their cheeses, but especially to make their cream cheese. And then there's also a wonderful dairy here in Michigan called Guernsey Dairy, owned by a family, but they collect milk from a variety of farmers around the state, and we use all of their dairy, their milk, their cream, and their sour cream, which is really critical to the success of our sour cream coffee cake. So those are two really important suppliers for us at the bakehouse. And then another agricultural product here in Michigan that's a big deal are cherries. So we use a lot of dried cherries, and we also use fresh cherries, and they come from northern Michigan. The hub there is Traverse City, and we get a lot of our cherries from an organization called Cherry Central. So those are two. We buy local apples from a family that is actually Hungarian, and their last name is Nemeth. And it's wonderful to have a really close relationship with them. And all of our pies in the fall are made, and all of our apple strudel is made with their apples. So that's another example of some local ingredients. And did you know, I think it's a little known fact that Michigan is the biggest producer of chestnuts in the entire country? I mean, Michigan is really, it's an amazing sort of state. Between the agriculture and then the car industry and then Kellogg's being here. But anyway, we're the biggest producer of chestnuts, and so we make a chestnut baguette out of the flour. Frank, what's the name of where we get the chestnut flour? Do you remember what they call themselves? Anyway, they're Michigan Chestnut Growers Association. So those are a few of the important people that we work with. Who else can we mention?
Right, okay, exactly. Let's get into a couple of... Oh, before we get into some more plugs, by the way, because I wanted to give you some feedback about the strudel that was really, really delicious. And I realized, I said, I got to bake this? And I said, oh, right, you got it. Now, it's not... The dough is not raw. It just needs to be crisp, right?
No, it was frozen raw, and then you put it in the oven and bake it. We don't usually send that through the mail. We usually just bake it for people, but we wanted you to try it, so we sent it to you frozen.
Oh, okay. And I thought about afterwards. Let's say if you take some crushed tomatoes, you know, not a whole can because you're doing, but crushed tomatoes, chopped meat, and raisins, and make a sauce out of it, and put it on top of it. You have the makings of stuffed cabbage.
Yeah, right. Did you ever put ginger cookies in your stuffed cabbage sauce?
No.
No, you never heard of that?
No, I didn't.
Well, my grandmother, where are you living now, Merle? Are you in Queens or?
Queens. Oh, we got delis.
Right, my grandmother, I used to visit my grandmother in Queens. She lived in Far Rockaway. And she would tell me that she put ginger cookies into her tomato sauce for her stuffed cabbage. So I was wondering if
that's
you did that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, as it turns out, because we have, I guess the big delis, there's not very many of them left, of the, you know, the kosher delis.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Well, I had discussions with the owners and stuff. I think because the kosher delis actually came around because of with the Jews coming into the United States, especially New York, it was a food, the comfort food to have. So the delis were opening, and they had also people needed to have employment, so they opened up delis. So there were a lot of kosher delis. This point, I don't think people, little by little, people didn't, I guess, really care as much. It didn't, you know. But there is a company, it's called Ben's Kosher Deli, and they have... I think six places. One in Florida. They opened one in Florida, but the other ones either out on Long Island or Queens. And actually, the manager of the one that I go to is of Hungarian descent too.
Oh.
So he'll be interested in hearing about this and. Who knows what the... Maybe they'll have something like that. So
what's their last
I think
name,
that,
you know?
I have to... I got to look it up because it's like, you know, in terms of pronouncing
it. Yeah, those Hungarian words are kind of strange.
Yeah, something with D-G-E-L... something. But anyhow, and by the way, the thing that I had gotten addicted to is tongue. You can't get it.
Oh yeah. Tongue.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's get to the book before we delve into one other thing that I'm gonna have you guys talk about, but let's get into the book. So tell me, how did this book come about?
Well, you know, we were going to celebrate our 25th anniversary. It was coming up, and we started to think about it, and we thought, wouldn't it be a great thing to kind of culminate the first 25 years by pulling all of our experiences and our most favorite recipes together in a book? So luckily, we thought of that a couple of years ahead of the anniversary, and the publisher said we could get it done in time, and so that was the real inspiration. It felt like a good time to reflect and to share what we'd learned and to share our recipes with our guests. That's the main inspiration behind the book.
Oh, okay. And if somebody wanted to make something, what do you think would be like the easiest thing maybe to make?
Right. Well, there are quite a few actually easy recipes in the book, Merle. There are one of our the cookie that sells the best for us is called a ginger jump up, and it's actually really simple to make, and that recipe is in the book. Our famous magic brownies are in the book, and they're really simple to make. So either of those. And then of the bread recipes, making a French baguette is really not complicated. It just takes, you have to have some elapsed time, some length of time. And so that would be a good bread one for people to make, or sesame semolina for people who haven't baked a lot of bread in their life.
Or challah.
Challah's in the book. There are three different challah recipes in the book. And other than the braiding, challah is not difficult to make. So that could be a good thing if somebody didn't braid it.
And really delicious.
Yeah, it's particularly delicious.
We put
our favorite one in that has rum-soaked raisins in it. We only make it for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Uh-huh. Or as I call it, Rosh Hashoma. Something that with the phone. Okay. Not sure why we didn't, why we're not connected. Let's see. Let me try. Let's see if I call. Maybe I could call. I'm gonna call back. Let's see. Top me, and let's do this. Let's see what the story is. Okay, let's try. Down. Okay. Let's try it again. Okay. Well, these things happen, you know. Okay. Let's try again. It says it's dialing. And it says the call failed. Well, I'm not sure. Oh, I had so many other questions. I hope, try one more time. It's dialing again. I don't know. I have no idea. Hopefully, well, I'm on the air, so it can't be me, I guess. Okay. All right. They're calling back. All right, got you back?
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We're back.
Then I tried calling you guys, and I guess you were trying to call me back, so it didn't go through.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so we're getting back. Okay, so, since we were talking about the easy things to make. Challah bread, to me, is the best. Is the ultimate bread for French toast.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yep, I agree. It may have been what our staff picked as the best French toast bread. I can't remember. Yeah, it's great.
I think they did, yeah.
Yep.
Very popular.
I like to really soak it in the egg and... And I use a mixture of egg, milk, sugar, and cinnamon, and a little touch of vanilla.
Yeah, a little vanilla. That's a good touch.
And then do you put some Michigan maple syrup on it?
Oh, no, it's too, by this time, it's too sweet.
Oh, uh-oh. Well, if you ever come to Michigan, you can buy some maple syrup and maybe give it a try.
Oh, that's another thing with maple syrup. You know, as a kid, I grew up on Log Cabin.
Right.
You know, I thought that was, you know, until I was old enough to realize, oh, this is not really maple syrup, maple flavored syrup. Well, so the first time, then at some point I had real maple syrup, and this was a while ago. I cannot like even order pancakes if they don't have real maple syrup. That's,
right.
You know,
a huge difference.
Yes, really is. It's amazing when it's just, again, it's the same thing like with the cream cheese. There was actually a company, I don't know who it is. I know there's a food market called Fairway Market that it's a small franchise that's I guess in the tri-state area here.
Yeah,
and I found somebody, some company or something that makes a cream cheese without the additives. It just says on it Benz or something like that. Who knows?
Huh.
Yeah.
I looked up
but
the other one that said Arlo. Arla,
yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway. Hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not going to stop from having people order from you guys because I have to do a whole big thing. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm going to be doing a travel piece. So I'm just going to ask you some questions since I haven't been to Ann Arbor. If you could tell me about, let's say, let's start with, I guess, theater and stuff like that, you know, the thing with the arts. What's
Well, on campus, there is a very old, very beautiful Hill Auditorium that hosts musicians and symphony orchestras from around the world, as well as hosting the Ann Arbor Folk Festival. Happens there over a period of a couple of days every January. And a few miles outside of town, the actor Jeff Daniels started the Purple Rose Theater, which they actually host both original plays and touring plays from around the country. And, of course, there's the on campus also is the Michigan Theater, which is a beautifully restored historic movie theater that has not in addition to movies has some music groups that play there, and it has a giant organ that raises out of the floor and they play really really beautiful music that transports you back in time to the 30s and 40s.
Then there's the University of Michigan Modern Art Museum, which is a relatively new museum and has some really interesting exhibits, and then which is also on University of Michigan's campus. As you can tell, University of Michigan plays a big part in the culture of Ann Arbor.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're a small place, but we get a lot of the wonderful things that you would get in a big city because we have this fantastic university. And then we have another museum on campus called the Kelsey Museum, which is of ancient art. So lots of variety in the arts in Ann Arbor. And it's easy to park and easy to get to it. So it's almost better than being in a big city, to tell you the truth.
Oh. How about the top attractions? What would you say, like, if I'm coming there, what's the must-see?
You know, when they interview people there, the first two things are Michigan Stadium and Zingerman's, quite honestly. That's each summer we have an art fair that lasts for 4 days in July, and it attracts just a ridiculous number of thousands of people who come. And they interview the police who worked the event, and the most common question they're asked is, where's Zingerman? So humbly I tell you that's the truth.
Right, but then the University of Michigan football stadium, isn't it? It's the largest stadium in the country.
Yeah.
Right, which is just shocking to me. Like, why do we have the largest stadium in the country? I don't get it, but it is. And so it would be great if you ever come here to come in the fall on what we refer to as a football Saturday when we're having a home game. And there's an extra 100,000 people in town to watch this football game, and it's like a big party. The party sort of starts on Friday night, and then people are tailgating on Saturday, depending on the time of the game. It could be all day long before a night game, and then the restaurants are full at night, especially happy if we've won, but still pretty lively when we don't win. So that's a big, big attraction.
And by the way, do you have any women's tackle football teams there?
No, but there are a lot of women partners at Zingerman's, and I think we could tackle people pretty
well.
No,
do you have any women's tackle football teams at the?
No.
Or maybe you don't know.
It could be. Listen,
at one point for 10 years, I was doing the public relations for the New York Sharks women's tackle football team here. And still, if I would say something, we have women's tackle football. Really? We do?
So do we have it here, Merle, and we just don't know
about
it?
I'll tell you once. Let's Google and see what you got. Let's see. I know there's over 100 teams in the United States.
Hmm.
And three different leagues.
Wow.
Let's see. Ann Arbor. Okay, let's see what we got here. Well, it's not pulling anything up, so I guess
I found the Detroit Dark Angels. So it looks
okay,
like
Detroit. Okay.
40 miles away, we have something, and it looks like they had some event in Flint. So that's 60 miles north. So it's been going on around us without Amy or I knowing about it.
It's interesting. It is interesting to watch because you can watch the game and go, really? These are women playing? Really?
Yeah, now I'm curious.
You wouldn't know. I mean, you would just say, this is, wow, they're really beating up on each other like a regular. It's NFL rules that they play, by the way.
Interesting. Do they get paid?
No, that's the problem. They haven't gotten to a point with women's tackle football teams to get paid. Anyway, I won't go into all that. But I was just curious about that. To get back to this, okay, so are there any other, so mostly stuff with the arts is really the things that, the must do, places to see while you're there.
We have a great downtown with a really surprisingly large restaurant scene. So for people coming in from out of town, even though we're actually not such a very big place, there are a lot of choices of very good food and a fun sort of downtown area with interesting shops to do some window shopping in. We have a great park that's called the Arboretum, which depending on the time of year could have some beautiful blooming flowers or just be very leafy and green, and you can walk along the Huron River, which is the river that runs through Ann Arbor. So that's a nice place that people like to go. And then sports is really an enormous thing here. So depending on the time of year, you can either go to a hockey game that University of Michigan is playing, or you can go to a football game, or maybe even
The final of the NCAA basketball.
Oh, right. They were just in the NCAA basketball final. So, you know, it's a really big sports town, too. So a lot of things for different people to enjoy.
Oh, that's good. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, then, I also wanted to ask you, so what Korean foods are you making? I mean, that, I'm really curious about that.
Well, the woman who's the owner of Miss Kim, Jihae Kim, was born in Korea and moved to the East Coast when she was 13 and grew up in New Jersey and studied at U of M and went into the healthcare industry, moved back to New Jersey, and her husband, I think, got a grad school position and back in Ann Arbor, and she decided to change careers, and I guess 8 years later, a year and a bit ago, opened Miss Kim, and so she makes Korean chicken. Fried chicken is very delicious, and all kinds of fresh salads with pickled vegetables, and of course kimchi. And she became famous because she had a food cart for several years, and she made the most delicious buns, pork buns, of course, pork belly, and mushrooms that are just really incredible, savory, super rich, and then, of course, the rice dishes are really great, rice bowls, and what's called rice cakes, which are really strips of, they almost eat more like thick pasta, but they're fried
or
hot sauce that are just irresistible. And then all kinds of Korean ribs and, a whole bunch of delicious food.
Wow.
You
I'm sorry?
You should visit the website. It's got
What's the website?
It's MissKimAnnArbor.com.
Okay. We have a very large Korean population in Queens.
Oh. So you must have a million.
And here's my thing about Queens. By the way, you can get any kind of food in Queens. Every ethnic food possible, you can go to a restaurant in Queens to have. And I started thinking about this, and I figured out how this all happened, is that you had all these people coming to the United States, and they came in through JFK Airport. They landed here, and they only had enough money to get to Queens. And they found some place to live, and they all decided, what are we going to do to make money? And they all decided they're going to open up a restaurant. That's the only logical thing to be. I mean, and the thing that I'm spoiled about is now, oh, great, because I don't want Americanized food if I want something that's ethnic. You know, it's like I cannot order Chinese food from down the block anymore. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I have to go into downtown Flushing where all the Chinese are and have it authentic. But anyway, what I also want to get into then is the tell me about this bacon fest that you're doing.
Camp Bacon has been going on
for
how many years, Amy?
I don't know, 4 or 5.
Probably more than 5 years, a celebration to, you know, one of our most revered sources of protein in the country, which has a whole lot of history to it. So our partner, Ari Weinzweig, one of the founders of Zingerman's Delicatessen, thought it warranted a celebration, and so 5 or 6 years ago began inviting people who produce or know a lot about bacon. And so it's a whole weekend of course, some really great eating, but also learning from these national and actually international experts in the celebration of bacon.
So one year they had someone come from Israel, talked about pig farming in Israel. So there's just a variety of speakers on, you know, an incredible number of topics. Someone came one year and talked about pigs in the ancient world. So it's a quite interesting combination, plus a lot of really great food. And then usually someone musical comes, right, who somehow, I don't know how they choose them, but it's usually someone from the South, American South.
There's only one person that should be chosen.
Who's that?
You know who that is?
No.
Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. He's not yet been here for that. But we'll tell Ari your suggestion.
Do you have a local place that produces bacon?
You know, probably the most local is Nusky's Bacon. That's the bacon that we use in our baked goods here, because we also make a bread that has bacon, and we make seasonally some pecan sandy cookies that have bacon in it that are unbelievably delicious. And Nusky's is in Wisconsin, and typically someone from their organization, that's a family-run business, and they come to Camp Bacon as well.
Do you have, like, do people come there that, like, for instance, I know, like, you can have an Italian meat store that makes their own bacon, or, you know, that kind of thing. Do you have places that come there that, you know, that make their own?
Yeah, I mean, they have the producers of different bacons from around the country. So Benton's Bacon, where are they from, Frank? Tennessee?
Kentucky.
And then Nusky comes, and there are several others that we're going to look it up. We're not we're the bakers, not the baconers. So we don't have all of them completely down. But, yeah, they...
Oh, okay.
We got a lot of things going on here.
It's okay. I was just kind of curious about whether people who are, like, making their own bacon or, small places, like, become part of this thing.
Yeah.
And they do a bacon tasting of, you know. But who's the one I get? Oh, Simon, on the Chew, the chef Simon. Everything is good with bacon.
Right. Yep. I think we agree.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's like, I guess it's that kind of the thing. I guess it's kind of like if you're Jewish, everything's good with lox.
Yeah.
And if you're not, everything's good with bacon.
Yeah, when you make those eggs with your cream cheese, are you going to put some lox and onion in it too?
No, I don't have any lox in the house. But what I do, and by the way, try this. When you putting in some cream cheese into the, when you're whipping up your eggs, you know, to put it in the pan, put in some cream cheese to make scrambled eggs, and it makes them very, very fluffy and delicious.
So you beat the cream cheese into the eggs, not just drop little
yes.
bits
and
of
then
sun?
Just and as it's scrambling, it all melts and it becomes, you know, keep, you know, moving it around and becomes nice, fluffy, scrambled eggs.
Okay, I'll try it that way. I've eaten it the other way where you have little chunks that you put on at the end of the process. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a way, too. But this is like, you'll see. It's like somebody said, why is it so fluffy? And I said, well, whipped up with cream cheese. And, but I'm going to instead put the cream cheese on the bread instead of doing it that. Or wait a minute. I know what's going on in my brain. The apple bacon. Apple bacon coffee cake. How would that taste with a little cream cheese on it?
Oh, that would be good.
Gonna heat it up and add a little cream cheese to it. Then I've now had, let's see, I had my protein, the fruit, the
all
dairy,
the
all in one. And the grains, yeah, listen, have that. Listen, you can go logical on anything if you want when you start throwing things into it. But anyway, do you guys have anything else you'd like to throw in into this, into our talk?
No, I think this has been a really nice time. We really look forward to having you come on that Michigan tour, and we'll make it worth your while when you come to Ann Arbor. We'll have some fun.
Yeah, I'm going to speak to, I think they told me to call someone named Margaret that handles.
Oh, yeah.
Are you, like, huh?
Yeah, we know Margaret.
That handles the public relations in Ann Arbor tourism?
Exactly, yes.
Good. Throw it.
I'll send her an email.
Tell her. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You could tell her, to see if we could push it for me to, for them to host me to come out there.
Okay.
And this way, because they'll also be able to look at the articles that I did when I did go out there. I'm one of these people. It's like if you tell me, that's why I ask you about the people that you're partnering with. It's like I want to give people as much publicity as I can. And so it's like when I go on a press trip, I don't write just about the hotels, or if I have somebody saying, well, we don't want to know about the hotels. Listen. I just got a toothpick from this company. They're getting into the article.
That's great.
Yeah, so, all right. So, listen, we'll be in touch. If I have any questions, of course, I'll, get back with you as I write this article, which will probably be, it might be in the next issue of the probably. I think I am slating it for the next issue of the Queen's Times. I'm going to be posting this right away to Facebook so people can listen to the show. And heavens knows, by the way, because I had done so much publicity for the New York Sharks, in about a week they're now going to honor me in their Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's great.
But I had been very pushy about things. So I did something like, I said, okay, I want you guys to sign a football. Then I'll tell you later what I'm doing with it. So what I wound up doing is I convinced the NFL Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, to take the football and display it in a showcase for 6 months. The first
oh, wow.
item ever from a women's tackle football to be displayed there.
Wow, they must have been thrilled
good,
with that.
Good job, Merle.
Yeah. So this is the kind of, these are the kind of things I do. And when people say why, the answer is because I can.
Yeah, right.
Well, thank you, Merle.
I have no other answer. Anyway, okay, guys.
Okay.
It was
okay.
It was great chatting with you.
Yeah,
you
thanks, Merle.
Bye-bye.
Now time for breakfast.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Good. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Ah, yes. That was... Okay. Yes, I'm going to have to eat. So because I have to eat, I need to end the show. Okay. God, I got to go. I have to go wipe the drool coming down from the sides of my mouth. Okay. Where is it? Okay, everybody, have a great day. Evening, afternoon, whatever it is. And tune in. I don't remember what's next, but I do have some. And my cat is chickens already had. Scrambled eggs.